Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. We're now well into day 16 of a partial government shutdown, and there doesn't seem to be a compromise in sight. Talks over the weekend between congressional Democrats and the White House yielded no concrete results, or steel, as the case may be. And the president announced today that he'll address the nation from the Oval Office tomorrow night to discuss what he says is a crisis on the southern border. Trump has doubled down on his request for a $5.7 billion amount to fund a promised border wall, even suggesting he might use emergency powers to have the military build it. And here's what White House advisor Mercedes Schlapp said, speaking with reporters earlier today. She said the Democrats need to stop what she's calling their delay tactics.
This is what it's about. It's about a negotiation. The Democrats themselves have said the importance of securing the border. I heard Nancy Pelosi. I heard Chuck Schumer. They said it. They said, yes, we agree we need to secure the border. They have yet to provide the definition of border security. Even the president was saying, because Nancy kept getting stuck on the wall, on the concrete wall, and the president's like, look, let's look into steel. Come with me. Let's work together to come up with a design. Let's work with our Border Patrol agents to come up with a design that works.
Nancy there, of course, is the new House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and she and Democrats said yesterday that they are not backing down. Open the government first, and then we'll talk.
We are committed to keeping our border safe. That has always been our principle, to honor the oath of office that we take to protect and defend our country and our Constitution. We can do that best when government is open. We've made that clear to the president.
So what's this all about? Can the president deliver on his campaign promise of building the wall? And can Democrats fulfill their promises coming out of the midterms? Well, joining us now to talk it over is Eric Fernstrom, founder and principal of the Shamit Group. He's a political consultant and a longtime former top aide to Mitt Romney. Eric, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also with us from NPR in Washington is Scott Fersen. He's a Democratic strategist and president of the Liberty Square Group. Scott, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you on this as well. In your view, is there a compromise to be reached in Washington? Do you support building the wall? And how should Democrats and Republicans come together? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. All right, Eric, let me start with you. What's your read of this impasse in Washington as it stands right now?
Well, Callum, I think the problem is that we have a highly charged political atmosphere in Washington. We're already knee-deep in the 2020 presidential election cycle. There are a number of Democratic senators running. The president, very early on, announced his candidacy for re-election. So since we're in campaign mode and not governing mode, we have a prescription for stalemate. Now, the idea of a fence or a wall or a barrier of some kind on the southern border is not a new one. Democrats have supported it in the past, but in this hyper-politicized environment, they don't want to be seen as conceding to the president on one of his main talking points from the 2016 campaign, and Trump, likewise, wants to deliver for his base. So here we are on the third week of the shutdown.
How do you see it, Scott? I mean, what's the battle really about? Is Eric right? Is it just onto politics now? And if so, that sounds like a pretty inauspicious prediction, because we've got 2 years left on this term before the next election.
I know it's going to make the next 2 years very interesting. Of course, it's writ large about politics, but I think the dynamic that's going on here is that you've got because of course there's a compromise to be had here. You pick a number in the middle and do it. We waste lots of money in the federal government on lots of things if you consider the wall to be a waste. And I agree with Eric that there's of course a wall on the border is part of the solution. But I think what you've got here are Democrats, particularly in the House, who think that they have the upper hand. And I frankly would tend to agree with that. And you've got a president who we always talk about his base, but I think his base is actually just what he sees in the mirror. And I think he's just happy as long as the attention is on him with a white hot intensity and borne by the fact that he's going to address the nation tomorrow night on TV. I think he's just happy as long as he's the center of attention. And therefore, that's where the tension is.
Scott, you say there's a compromise to be had, but I mean, can that really be the case when both sides have laid out such extreme terms? I'm thinking of something that Nancy Pelosi said very recently when she was talking to reporters, and she didn't just say that it's a waste of money or a boondoggle. She used much more severe language. This is what she had to say.
Fact is, a wall is an immorality. It's not who we are as a nation. And this is not a wall between Mexico and the United States that the president is creating here. It's a wall between reality and his constituents.
And immorality, Scott. I mean, that's pretty strong. I mean, if it's an immorality, then in theory she shouldn't be willing to give even a dollar for it, right? So how could she possibly compromise from here?
Well, that's where I think it is. I mean, I would tend to agree with that. Although now it's questionable as to sort of how effective the wall is in terms of people moving back and forth. But I think the immorality is not handling DACA. That's a real immorality of 2 million people who are here, and because of this kind of noise and nonsense, we can't address that. And if she's serious about it, she would, I think, be pushing for DACA solution in this budget impasse and get the government opened up. But somehow we're talking about $0 to $5.6 billion with nobody budging from either side.
Eric, how do you read that? Is that a deal that would be on the table? I mean, do you think that this president and the Republicans would exchange DACA for the wall?
Well, I think that's inevitably where we're going to end up. You know, Trump has tried to get the Democrats to compromise on the semantics around the issue. You know, he's willing to stop calling it a wall and use terms like fence. He's willing to use steel instead of concrete. But the Democrats are unmoved. They're not going to concede on the substance. They're certainly not going to concede on the semantics. But if we can get past the politics, I think the solution is to go big on immigration. And by that I mean we need to produce a bill that encompasses a number of immigration-related initiatives that are sought by both sides. So in that context, I think you can give Trump some additional money for a wall. But in return, the Democrats get to enact into law protections for the DACA population. And perhaps, you know, they can win some extensions for those who are here under temporary protected status, but they're going to see that status expire. If we stay fixated on the wall and only the wall, I don't see how we arrive at a compromise at this point, given that both sides are pretty much dug in on their respective positions.
All right. Lewis is calling from Revere, and he says that there's another angle of this that perhaps we're not considering. Lewis, what is that? What might we be missing here?
Okay, what I was saying was, I mean, a wall is really not going to do anything. I mean, we can put a wall as high as we want. We can dig, you know, as many holes as we want. And what we need to change is the law. I mean, a wall, and not only that, I mean, we build a wall, but we got to think about the ecosystem, too. I mean, it's not only people that use, you know, come from Mexico to the U.S. There's an ecosystem that lives on that border and that, you know, animals need to come back, you know, back and forth. And if we change our law system, I think that will help with the immigration. Our wall is not going to do anything if we don't have anyone to secure that wall, to take care of the wall. You know what I mean?
So, Lewis, I take it you're opposed to the idea of the wall. So are you saying then that the president and his supporters are perhaps not accounting for economic damage that would ensue from building the wall?
Yep. I'm against the wall because I don't think the wall is going to work. I think if we change our law, if we change the way the law protect the illegal immigrants, I think that will do more than just building a wall and hoping that people are going to just go back because they see a wall.
Lewis, thanks for the call. Scott Ferson, let's pick it up from there. I mean, does Lewis have a point? I mean, is this really more of an economic debate than just one about steel and concrete?
Well, it gets to those larger points that we're talking about, which I think is right. I mean, if we continue to be, for Democrats to be completely fixated on Trump's obsession with the wall, which I think is complete folly, I'd be inclined to let him build it and put his name on it so that we all know that he owns it. And I think it's, as Lewis mentions, it's not going to really solve the problem there. But if it gives us an opportunity to address the things that he talked about, the larger issues around immigration, the ones that Eric talked about, that would actually be progress. And I think for Democrats who've newly taken the House back to show some leadership on some of those larger issues that maybe Donald Trump isn't focused on because he's so fixated on his wall would be progress. And I think would work to the Democrats' benefit moving forward politically as well.
Interesting. So there's a Democratic argument for perhaps just letting the president have his wall. But I wonder if he can actually claim victory even if he does eventually get the wall. And I want to flash back to something he said on the campaign trail in Akron, Ohio in August of 2016. And he set a very high bar for how this whole wall would play out.
That wall will go up so fast, your head will spin. And you'll say, you know, he meant it. And you know what else I mean? Mexico is going to pay for the wall. 100%.
So, Eric Fernstrom, I mean, what about that? I mean, let's say the president eventually does get his wall. Will that satisfy his base, do you think? Because I think the prospect of Mexico paying seems unlikely at this point. I think most Americans would agree with that. And also, I think we're past the point where you could say that it's gone up so fast that our heads are spinning. So would it still be counted as a win among Trump supporters?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be hard to separate the winners from the losers if this standoff goes on much longer. One of the physical laws of politics is that a crisis requires a response. And while some people may not agree that there's a crisis on the border, certainly if government remains closed much longer, that's going to create a different type of crisis. And while at first the shutdown might have been mildly inconvenient, in other words, some monuments and museums in D.C. were closed, now we're starting to hear about federal TSA workers who are not getting paid during this shutdown, but they're still required to work, but they're beginning to call in sick. So when people start missing their flights because of long security lines, or hundreds of thousands of federal workers and contractors can't make their rent payments, or start defaulting on their mortgages, or food stamps are no longer available for people who depend on them, public opinion is going to broadly turn against anyone in D.C., whether they're Democrat or Republican. In fact, the worst possible thing to be if you're running for president in the midst of a shutdown like this is going to be your status as an elected office holder.
Although the president says he's been hearing lots of support from federal workers saying, well, hey, don't open the government until you get that wall.
Well, whether your name is Trump or Senator Elizabeth Warren, if this shutdown continues, if it persists, then everybody's goose is going to get cooked. And I think then it's at that point that a solution will finally emerge.
All right, so listeners, remember, you can join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And calling in now is Pat from Sudbury. And, Pat, I understand you agree with Nancy Pelosi on this argument. What does she get right?
Well, that it's an immorality, and that's not what this country stands for. And I don't frankly think that our current president really does stand for this country or the people in it. I think he just cares about his ego and, saving face. And at this point, it's a lose-lose for him and for the country because the wall will not keep us any safer. It's a ridiculous waste of money. It's a ridiculous idea. The whole thing is just laughable because it won't. What we need is to work on the regulations, which Democrats have tried to do. Reasonable people, if they were in our government, would be able to accomplish this. But right now we have an administration, you know, that hopefully now that the Democrats have the House will be a little more reasonable because so far the Republicans haven't had the backbone to stand up to Trump and say and do the right thing for the American people.
Pat, thanks for the call. So she agrees with Nancy Pelosi, but Charlie calling in from Salem says he is for the wall. Charlie, why?
Yeah, I'm for the wall because if you look back in history, walls that have been created between sovereign nations have worked effectively. And, I think that the immigration debate has been ongoing now for nearly most of my life, close to 30 years, and we've done very little to stem the flow of illegal immigrants into this country.
Charlie,
now,
we were just
any legal immigrant.
Sure, sure. I wanted to ask you to sort of put a concrete answer to a question we were sort of having with Scott and Eric a moment ago, which was whether pro-wall supporters would be satisfied if it turns out that we, the taxpayers, are the ones paying for it, and if it takes a while to get done. Is that good enough for you? You're not getting Mexico footing the bill, and it's not going up so fast that your head is spinning.
Yeah, given the cost of illegal immigration to this country every year, a $5 billion price tag to fund the construction of a wall promises a great return on investment.
All right, Charlie, thanks for the call. So Charlie says that a wall at any time, paid for by anybody, would satisfy him. Dave calling from Roslindale, though, says that we're missing a fundamental question. What's that, Dave?
the fundamental question is who stays, who goes, and who gets to come in the future. Until we decide that, wall small, you know, people will still come. We need to decide the people who are already here, how many of them get to stay. Democrats are unwilling to mention any group because once they do that, they are, you know, viewed as people who are keeping people out. They don't want to say also who will they keep out because, once again, they don't want to do that. Republicans in there can't understand why to send everyone home and keep everyone out, which is unrealistic also. So somebody needs to step up and say who will they let in, who will they keep out, and who will they, you know, send home. Until they answer that question, what's the point of a wall?
Dave, thanks for the call. Scott Ferson, let's pick that up. I think Dave makes an interesting point, and this is going to, I assume, become a hot topic of debate during the Democratic primary, which just kicked off this past weekend with Elizabeth Warren traveling to Iowa, by the way. Democrats are going to have to answer that question, right? So what are going to be the terms? You can't let everybody in. So who gets to stay and who has to go? How do you think Democrats are going to reconcile that question?
Well, I think that, I mean, under the Constitution, having Congress debate sort of the immigration policy of the country is where it has to be. So I put, you know, one branch controlled by Republicans, one by Democrats, have to figure out that larger issue that the caller talked about. But I think here, and I think this is where I would make this concession to the caller, what Democrats have been reluctant to do is actually talk about the policies of the, let's say, the Obama administration. You know, I don't think people are running around, and certainly President Obama wasn't, talking about how many people get deported under his administration, but they were as severe as they are under the present administration in a lot of metrics. So there are decisions that are and decisions that are being made every day on who gets to stay and who gets to go. What we lack is the larger one that says this is what our vision is about how we're going to grow. We're in this jobs crisis where we can't find people to come, and unemployment is so low to take these jobs. How are we going to do that so that we're growing as a country and achieving our economic growth?
Eric, you sort of laid out some of the drawbacks of the shutdown that we're in a little bit earlier. But from a political standpoint, is this a win for the president? I mean, he's coming out of a midterm election where Democrats won the House. Is he managing to overshadow whatever the congressional agenda might be here?
Well, like I said, I think it's going to be hard to separate the winners from the losers. I think they all come out looking bad. I mean, there's no question that the level of attack and vitriol that's existing now in Washington hasn't previously been experienced. And I'm not just talking about Trump. Of course, he's made his contributions to the low level of discourse in our Capitol. But there's also been, you know, of course, the foul language being used on the other side, inept comparisons to Hitler and Nazism. These are not helpful, particularly when you consider that fortifying the border has always been a shared priority of the two major parties. It could be, you know, the other thing that's happening, of course, is we have this trade impasse between China and the U.S., and at one time we thought that would never be resolved, and yet both sides are meeting in Beijing this week. There seems to be some optimism around the idea of a negotiated solution. So how did we arrive at that point? And I think it's because one of the parties began to feel some pain, and that's China. So they're now at the table. They want to talk about it. So in a shutdown of indeterminate length, you know, who's going to be feeling the most pain? And I think it's going to be public employee unions. It's going to be advocates for government spending. It's going to be social safety net dependents. And these are all traditionally Democratic constituencies. So it's very hard to get inside the mind of Trump. But as I try to, I tend to believe that this is what he is banking on, these traditional Democratic constituencies are going to feel the most pain from the shutdown. They're going to understand that the president is unmovable on the issue, and they're going to begin to put pressure on the Democrats to end this standoff. Time's going to tell, of course, but that could very well be what the president is banking on.
Eric, you have an ally in Worcester. Mark is calling from the heart of the Commonwealth to agree with something that Eric just said. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, and I do agree with that. Hi, I agree that the people that are supporting Trump will be intractable. But I also see the Democrats as being that way, that it seems to me that a lot of the Democratic base are do anything but give Trump what he wants. And so I don't necessarily see either side moving on that. And I wonder if you guys see any, you know, if the Democrats are intractable and the president's intractable, then how do we get out of this?
So, Scott Fersen, how about that point from Mark? I mean, if the Democrats come out of this looking just as intractable as the president, does that hurt them in 2020?
I don't think so. I think that for Democrats, if we're talking about members of Congress, that if there were a compromise that included, you know, somewhere between the zero and $5.6 billion for the border wall, or Trump would say that it was going to be for the border wall, that I think a lot of Democrats would go for that. I think, though, the pressure from constituency groups, I think, will be to their members of Congress and their senators, which is why I think you see Susan Collins the senator from Colorado start to send messages that they're wavering a little bit. I think they probably are or will start to hear from their constituents, and they may be Democrats, but you know, those are in purple states, and if Mitch McConnell loses a couple of those, I think it will be Mitch McConnell who will be the adult on the Republican side, who will engender a compromise here with Democrats. And I think the beautiful thing, one of the beautiful things about being Donald Trump, must be that he declares victory whether he wins or loses, and convinces himself of it. And I think at some point he will, whatever the compromise is, and whoever sits down and negotiates that with the Democrats, if it's him and his team or Mike Pence or Mitch McConnell, he's going to declare victory and move on to the next thing.
I think declaring victory might be what you'd call the art of the deal there, right, Scott?
There you go.
What kind of deal, though, would the president take? I mean, he seems to have maybe some room for compromise, although it may just be something as simple as what the building materials would be. This is what the president said on Friday. He was talking about his original plan to do it in concrete, says, well, maybe he'd be open to something else.
Steel is stronger than concrete. If I build this wall or fence or anything the Democrats need to call it, because I'm not into names, I'm into production. I'm into something that works. If I build a steel wall rather than a concrete wall, it will actually be stronger than a concrete. Steel is stronger than concrete, okay? In case you could check it out.
Okay, Mike, calling from Everett, what about that? I mean, is that enough of a compromise? You say that the president isn't really negotiating. He says, sure, he's negotiating. He might be willing to do steel instead of concrete.
Well, I guess my point is that, I mean, he says that he's a great negotiator, and that's kind of how he sold himself to the American people. But I'm kind of, all I've seen from his negotiating tactics on almost every topic is he's just a bully. He's basically said that he was proud to shut the government down, which means he's basically putting his agenda ahead of the American people or at least the government workers. He's saying that their jobs are not as important as him getting his way. And I personally am really disappointed by that.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Last word to you, Scott Fersen. You know, we hear this complaint that the president is perhaps just bullying his way to a victory, not perhaps considering the broader good. I think the last question I think that I'm wondering about is whether this build the wall mantra that he campaigned on and continues now is just sort of a dog whistle to anti-immigrant groups in the United States.
Well, there's, you know, I think there's an argument, obviously, to be made of that. I think personally, I think we should put that aside, because that's also a larger context of what the directions of the both parties are. But you mentioned the art of the deal, and I think I'm not sure Donald Trump is thinking globally about a lot of these things, and he's just thinking about closing. And even if the deal doesn't go his way, he's going to go out and tell the next audience that it was the best deal that was ever negotiated. So I think he's thinking not thinking strategically in that way.
All right, that's Scott Fersen joining us from NPR in Washington. He's a Democratic strategist and president of the Liberty Square Group. Scott, thanks.
Thank you.
And Eric Fernstrom, founder and principal of the Shamit Group, the political consultant and former longtime top aide to Mitt Romney. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.